Good, we get a more basic quality now. You're just talking about very high dhammas, and now someone is bringing us back to very basic qualities, or maybe not basic, in the fundamental. Because if someone doesn't even have gratitude, they will not progress through the stages of enlightenment. Now, the Buddha said it's entirely the sphere of a good person, the gratitude. And someone who doesn't have any sense of gratitude and he's completely separate, that would be an almost limited definition of the asutava putujana from a different angle. Now, the ordinary, untrained, worldly person. And the one quality how you can recognize that would be in the ingratitude, the lack of gratitude. Of course, if that is such an important quality, but at the same time also a rare quality. Now, the Buddha said the three persons are rare to find in the world. Number one, Sammasambuddha, a perfectly awakened Buddha, is very rare. Secondly, enlightened disciple of the Buddha who can explain the Dhamma, obviously also very rare. And number three, a grateful person. Now this shows that your question is highly justified because that quality doesn't come so naturally to most of us. Now the first thing, the wide view goes ahead. So the first thing for developing gratitude is knowing how much the Buddha praised this quality. And then having that conviction, that faith in the Buddha's teaching. And if our mind inclines more to ingratitude or lack of gratitude, that we recognize that as not beneficial and not wholesome, because we have actually faith and conviction in the Buddha and his teaching, and he praises gratitude. So if in my mind it feels a bit different, then we recognize it with mindfulness and then make a deliberate effort to develop gratitude. The one thing how we do that is, for example, with these Buddha pujas. Together with the precepts, I also want to publish the morning chanting and the evening chanting as recorded on this last full moon day, because we had quite a good chorus there, so to speak, quite a few people. Quality is still not exactly perfect, but anyway, what can you do? We're not in a trained opera chorus or something. And separating that, that you can listen only to the chanting or only to the eight precepts and so on. Because if we do this puja, that is obviously a form of expressing your gratitude to the Buddha. And if you look at the words of the chanting, they usually express gratitude as well. So when we do this puja, that is already an act of expressing our gratitude to the Buddha. That's maybe a good way to start. Shouldn't be too difficult to feel grateful to the Buddha. In particular, if people are traditional Buddhists and have a long conditioning, that may be one way of bringing up that quality, because that would have been trained from a young age. And you can enhance that effect by being aware of that. Awareness, mindfulness, the clear comprehension, always understanding what you're actually doing and what it's supposed to do with your mind and what are the causes and conditions. Sometimes people do the Buddha puja, evening chanting and so on. They do that only out of habit. And they've never really thought about it. What's the point? What does it all mean? And so on. It's still good to do it like that. But like everything in the Dhamma, the more your wisdom faculty is operating, the more you understand that this is actually an active conditioning process. And that you are conditioning things like faith, devotion, gratitude to the Buddha and the Triple Gem. Now, understanding that means that you're actually further enhancing that process. It works better if you understand what you're doing. because you can improve the input. And you can do, for example, next time you do a evening chanting or Buddha Puja in the morning, you deliberately do it with an emphasis on developing the quality of gratitude. Once you start with the Buddha, it shouldn't be so difficult to extend it. This is why I have these photos, to extend it to people like Ajahn Mun, Ajahn Chah, my preceptor, Bulim, all the other great Ajahns. Well, that is the idea. We have the relics, ancient Savakas, Venerable Sariputta, Venerable Ma Moggallana, and all the great realized Arahants over the last 2.5 millennia. Well, then you can start extending gratitude to them. Then you think of Sangha, the community of enlightened disciples. Then you already have lay people included. Now your gratitude will also go to Lady Visakha and Anatta Pindika and so on. And then you already have a very large number of people and a very strong feeling of gratitude. And then the next exercise I would recommend is simply writing a list. You probably have some notes app on your phone. Do you take notes on your phone? Endless apps about notes. So start a new note. Gratitude. What am I grateful for? And the amazing thing is, once you give attention to something, you often find more. It's the same in meditation. Once you have a bit of calm and you give attention to that, the calm tends to grow stronger. Once you have a little bit of contentment and you give attention to the feeling of contentment, it tends to grow. So once you start to list, even if you have nothing in the list, but at least you have started your little app, and now you have got one note, all I'm grateful for. And if the quality of gratefulness has not yet been developed so strongly in our heart, then maybe nothing comes to mind. But once you think a bit, you suddenly find something. The first thing we all can be grateful for is being born as a human being at the time when the teaching of the Buddha is available. If you consider how rare that is, it is like a jackpot, not just like winning the lottery, but it's literally like winning the jackpot. So one that could be your first item. Human being at the time of sasana, and you already have made contact with it. I've already three things. If you have made it to a certain age, and I'm in my late 50s now, I can be grateful that so many beings don't make it to that. Some get aborted before they get even born. Others die as kids and so on and so on. Must be quite a bit to be grateful for that we reach the age we have now. And then start thinking about what you are receiving from others. Often we don't like to reflect on that. But just imagine you were the only person here on earth. How long would you survive? I'm pretty sure I wouldn't survive long. So the first thing we have to acknowledge, we actually depend on other human beings for our sheer survival. And that is not just as kids or babies, but right now. Because now you're probably not a farmer, you wouldn't know how to grow your food and so on. Or all the other things which we constantly consume. And because we pay for it, it may not feel like that. But without these other human beings, we couldn't even survive. And then you start thinking what you have received from your parents, from other relatives, maybe siblings, from your friends, from school, education. For sure, our parents may not be Arahants. teachers in school not necessarily all enlightened, so that you can also write a list of complaints. I'm not saying that there are no complaints. There's probably things where your parents were less than perfect, or where they did things which were not so great for you, and same with school and so on. But obviously you have got the choice, and you can also start a different note, all the things I like to complain about. But just look at what is a result. If you write long lists of all your complaints and then think about that, how will you feel? Or if you write a list of all the things you can be grateful for, how will you feel? This is maybe the most important point for developing gratitude, to recognize that it's actually a very pleasant emotion. I think most people think of gratitude as kind of forced gratitude. You got to be grateful for me, and now I will demand something from you. If you don't want to be put into that situation, someone doing you a favor and then constantly reminding you and asking favors back. But this is not what is meant when the Buddha talks about gratitude. Now, if you think about and acknowledge all the good things you have received, and this is independent from any bad things you may have received, even if there were lots of bad things, that doesn't mean you didn't get the good things. The question now is simply, what do we focus on? What do we pay attention to? And once you start thinking about all the good things you have received, you will notice that it's actually very uplifting. It's not like many people, I think, imagine gratitude to be a little bit like a burden. You have to carry this burden like a debt. But if you reflect on all the good stuff you received, you will notice that it's actually very uplifting, and it's related to mudita and anumodana. Once you notice that gratitude actually feels really good, then the deal is done. You will continue developing it. And then, of course, it is nice to express it. With the Buddha Puja, we are already expressing it. That's one reason why we are doing that, because you feel gratitude to the Buddha and so somehow feel, I want to express it also. With parents and other human beings, one can even just saying thank you. If we think about ourselves, if we really make a sacrifice for someone else's benefit, and the person acknowledges that, even if they don't give us huge gifts or huge things in return, usually it is quite gratifying if they acknowledge it, because then you know at least they've noticed it. Because some people may not even notice how much you're sacrificing for them, and only complain that the sacrifice is not even bigger. But if they even just say thank you, then it's maybe not so much a thank you, but now you know at least they noticed it. And that can be quite uplifting. So we can do that ourselves by acknowledging to others the good things they have done. And then they feel quite happy. One also has to learn that. Some people feel awkward if others express their gratitude. Just like some people feel awkward about gratitude because they feel it's like carrying a debt or a mortgage. So sometimes we also feel awkward when people say thank you. But I think if you develop gratitude, part of it that you will become more used to feel actually happy about that. And then if someone comes and says thank you to you and expresses that quite emotionally, you don't feel awkward or embarrassed, but you feel actually mudita, both for the good stuff you have done, there's nothing wrong in feeling happy about doing good things, and also feeling mudita that this person has actually gratitude and even says it. And then all these good qualities can further increase. So Is that helpful? Was that useful?
Good. I was also thinking about expressing gratitude, sort of giving back to the people who have been kind to you.
To do something is great and give back is great. However, the first thing is even just developing it in the mind. And when people are not so strong yet on gratitude, if this is maybe one thing that blocks them, because it goes kind of together. And if you're really grateful, you also want to give back a bit. And this is maybe the stumbling block. This is why people don't want to acknowledge it. Now, the Buddha said for the parents, it's so big, the gratitude, the debt of gratitude. Even if you carry them on your shoulders for 100 years and do every service, it's still not fully repaid. But when people think like that, that may then cause them to kind of try to block out gratitude. So my recommendation would be to first start developing it, even just as an emotion. And I would have quite a bit of faith. And once someone gets it emotion, then the intention and the action of also doing something will probably come quite naturally. But if you immediately tell them that you should be grateful and you should do all these things in return, then they just back out and it's too much. Katanyukatavedi, Thai culture stresses that in general, Ajahn Chah. Now all wise people, everyone who knows the teaching of the Buddha, the Sotava, someone who has an understanding and knowledge of the teaching of the Buddha, and they would know that. And it is a giveaway. It is a giveaway. It's not so easy to gauge others, and one has to be careful with that. Because what may look like ingratitude, if you're not a mind reader, you're not 100% sure, but by and large, if someone is really totally lacking any gratitude, it's a pretty good indicator, it cannot be a good person. On the other hand, if someone has that really strongness, a strong indication that this is actually a good, decent person. It's one of the giveaway qualities. The other one is like lying without shame as a giveaway of a really, really dangerous person. Yeah, here's a good question about one of the epithets we usually chant about the Dhamma, akaliko. Kalika is concerned with time, akalika is a negation, no time or timeless. And the question, what does it actually mean? And if there's no time, how can we practice and realize the Dhamma? And this is exactly what we want to do, investigating the qualities of what we take refuge in. Because the deeper your understanding and reflecting on these epithets the Buddha has given himself, that deepens your understanding about what you take refuge in. And the deeper your understanding, the more profound you can take refuge. From my understanding, you can look at it in two ways. One is akalika, in the more conventional sense and externally, that the teaching of the Buddha is timeless in the sense that it works now just as it worked 2,500 years ago. So you can investigate the Four Noble Truths, you will experience suffering. The cause of suffering is craving. And this is exactly the same now as it was in the Buddha's time. Or in Vietnam, 1,000 years ago, or in India 2,000 years ago, or in Sri Lanka 1,500 years ago. It is timeless in that sense. Now all the teachings you have, the conceptual teachings even, in the Tipitaka, they are timeless, that you can practice it at any time. And in 10,000 years, if that is still available, if anyone knows about it, they can still practice it in the same way. Secondly, on a more profound level, I would say it is timeless once you fully realize the Dhamma. The internal experience of Nibbana is timeless. So, and in that sense, there's really no time. For the first sense, that you can practice the Dhamma now as well as 2,500 years ago, timeless here doesn't mean there's no time. Obviously, time has passed over the last 2,500 years, but you can still practice it. However, in the experience of Nibbana, this is really timeless in the sense that there is no time. Because, for example, nothing is changing. So how could there be a time if there's nothing changing? Time is connected with impermanence. As long as you have time, things will be impermanent. And impermanence is how you measure or can recognize time. But the actual experience of Nibbana is timeless in the full, complete sense that there is no time. There's nothing impermanent. But of course, you cannot understand that by thinking about it. In a sense, the best one to get closer to that would be an experience of samadhi, because it's already very timeless. Not completely, but particularly the deeper samadhis, when people attain that, they usually are unable to say exactly how long they have been in that experience. And when they come out, they may notice by now it's dark, and then they can calculate or they can look at the clock. But in the deeper samadhis, why they're in that experience? Because there's nothing changing until it disintegrates again, the samadhi. But until that moment, there's basically nothing changing. And so there's no way for them to measure the time. It's a timeless when. So you can experience no time already in samadhi, only with a caveat that there's still a limit, and when this state comes to exhaust its conditions, it will be over. But for that period, it will be a very timeless experience. On a still lower level, you can get a somewhat timeless experience by just being in the present moment. That's not really timeless, but you will notice if you sustain present moment attention for a while, it's a very fascinating, timeless experience. And I remember that even externally, as a young monk, in these monasteries, there was no change really, because you don't have this alternation of work days and holidays. You may have the precept days as a little bit, but other than that, you have a daily schedule which doesn't really change, and you're living in quite a timeless realm in that monastic environment. I mean, that is not on a very profound level of timelessness, but it's more timeless than a very rushed, busy lay life. And once you are sitting down and focus internally, and you sustain a really pinpoint present moment awareness, it's not really timeless, because there's constantly new phenomena arising, but if you stay there in the present moment, it's actually vastly more timeless than jumping around between past, present, and future. So if you want to get more a feeling what is meant by timelessness, I would recommend that as the first one where you get an actual experience. Because you can't really think timelessness. The thinking involves times. The thoughts are constantly changing. It's something very bound up with time passing. This is why you can think so much in an hour. So try to be in present moment awareness, just with the breath or Buddha. And if you can sustain present moment awareness for half an hour, you will have half an hour of not complete timelessness, but more than normal. The next one would be the experience of unification and samadhi. And that is already very timeless. only with the caveat that it comes to an end. But there's already no change as long as that state lasts. And then the experience of full nibbana is obviously totally beyond time. Yes. So thanks for the question. In the very simple form, externally, it means that the teaching the Buddha has given 2,500 years ago are just as applicable and valid and can be practiced now. But the real timelessness can be discovered in the heart. Now, this is the two aspects of the Dhamma refuge. One is the more externally, the teaching of the Buddha, which you can express in Pali or in English, the words, notion, concepts, thoughts. And that is also an important refuge. But the other aspect is a Dhamma which can be discovered in our heart. That is a more profound. Okay, maybe enough now. Thank you for your patience. My gratitude that you are listening so quietly and patiently.